Welcome to another MyTunes podcast on manxradio.com with me, Mark Tiley, and courtesy of our friends at Shaw Isle of Man. Oh yes, the first of two saxophonists to appear on this programme, back to back. Let's meet the first one.
Mark Tiley, the nation's station, Manx Radio.
Jerry Carter is my guest on this week's MyTunes. We're both in sort of miles away from each other, well, relatively speaking, and great to have you on, Jerry.
Oh, it's lovely to be invited. Thanks, Mark.
I mean, at some stage, obviously, later in the week, I do expect a saxophone to come out. I mean, that's a given, isn't it?
I think people are under enough stress with the coronavirus and everything. They don't want to be listening to the saxophone unless there's a crowd needs dispersing.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. One thing, people may know, obviously, you're an advocate, but also you're a great sax player, but you're one of the funniest people I know. I think you're the sort of the island's version of Humphrey Littleton, as far as I'm concerned.
I saw the great man many, many years ago. He was playing at the Villiers Hotel with Jim Kane and Dougie Davidson supporting him. And apparently he was being interviewed by Jim Kane, and he said sometimes he had to remind himself he was a musician first, because some of Humphrey's, some of his quotes were hilarious. He really was a great sense of humour.
And you remember the great days of I'm Sorry, I Haven't a Clue, when he was rounding them all up. Oh, my goodness. So tell me, how did you get into the legal world, Jerry? How did all that start?
It just sort of came from when I was at school. I wanted to come back to the Isle of Man. And in those days, you either had to sort of go down the route of accountancy, teaching, medicine, or law. And I could never add up. I didn't have any patience with kids. And I couldn't stand the sight of blood. So law was the only one that was left, really.
And where did you train?
I went to university in Cardiff, which was a wonderful experience because they give you a love of beer. Samuel Arthur Brains is medicinal Cardiff brew. They give you a love of rugby, which I didn't really enjoy at school until I went away to university. And rugby's more of a religion than anything else in Cardiff. And I developed a love of music when I was down there. And then after 3 years of drinking beer, listening to bands and watching lots of rugby, they give you a degree for it. Wonderful people, really.
It's a marvellous rite of passage, I think, is what I'd say.
Yes, I think that's a very good description.
And you were always going to come back to the Isle of Man. I mean, it's home, yeah?
It's always been my home. My brother had no intention of leaving. My sister went and joined the army, and she's settled in the UK. Three of my kids live in the UK, and one of my daughters lives here. But for me, I always wanted to come back here.
People who might not have had so many dealings with the law on the Isle of Man might not know that the differences between the legal, well, the court proceedings here compared to across. Can you just clarify them for me?
Of course, the Isle of Man, for its own internal laws, is completely independent. Matters that extend to international issues, such as copyright or treaties, sanctions, things like that, the United Kingdom's responsible for us. But essentially, we make our own internal laws. So we've evolved our own legal system. We're presided over by judges that have the lovely name of Deemsters. And we are what we call a fused profession. We don't have solicitors and barristers. We have advocates who can do all the administrative work, do all the conveyancing and things like that, and still appear in court and put on in the High Court, although not so much nowadays, put on a wig and gown. And have the right of audience and conduct jury trials and things like that. So we're a fused profession, unlike England.
A fused profession, yes. So solicitors, barristers as one. Is that the same as Scotland?
No, yes and no. Scotland have advocates, but they have solicitors as well.
Ah.
And they have senior advocates, they have QCs. I see that Alex Salmond, for example, had a very senior Scottish Silk QC acting for him. Most of the world is a fused profession. The United Kingdom, I think, is the exception rather than the rule.
Oh, okay. Now, we're going to talk a lot more about music during the week, but let's get our first track on. What's it going to be?
The first track could be, I thought if I go back to my youth, and it's a band that I always loved and saw at the Isle of Man, a band called Darts, and it's a song called It's Raining. Darts were a retro sort of doo-wop band, and It's Raining was a nice one because it was the first chart hit that they wrote themselves. And they seem to be going destined for great things. And then as quickly as they arrived on the scene, they just seemed to disappear. But this was one of my favourite Dart songs. And I saw them at the Palace Lido in 1978, and they were tremendously entertaining.
Tunes on Manx Radio, second outing for Jerry Carter, advocate, sax player, bon vivant, and a soul campaigner for free beer for advocates. It's not going terribly well, that last one, Jerry.
No, there have been more successful political campaigns, if I'm honest. And of course, with the recent coronavirus, I've had to suspend the campaign.
This is the great sadness, well, particularly for, I don't know how many were in the camp, with you for free beer for advocates, but it's a great sadness.
Well, just as it was beginning to get some political traction, I thought, and it hadn't entirely been embraced by members of Timwald, but I was working on it.
Well,
I think we were on the verge of greatness with the campaign. Well, sadly, priorities meant that I've had to suspend the campaign. unfortunate, but there it is.
There it is. Now, tell me, you mentioned, you touched on not just a love of fine ale and a great seat of learning in Cardiff, but also, was I right in thinking that's where you started playing the saxophone, or had you already begun?
A sort of set of circumstances. I managed to go through my secondary education and being thrown out of the recorder classes and have no aptitude whatsoever for anything that musical. And when I was down in Cardiff, Danny Neal, Anglin Buttermore and Jerry Christian were down trying to make their way in the world of music. I knew Danny from school and I was introduced to Anglin and Jerry, and I used to hang around with them when they had a band called Brooklyn, I think. And it was a whole new world to me, and I just loved sort of hanging around. And I got the bug then and blew my student grant on a second-hand alto saxophone from City Sounds in Cardiff and had some lessons. And that was when I got started, really.
And there was always going to be the saxophone, or had you looked at other things? Were you considering other instruments?
Yeah, I tried. Guitar, but I couldn't work it because it's too complicated. Your hands are doing different things. And similarly with a piano, and they had these dreadful things called bass clefs with pianos. So a saxophone is probably the easiest instrument in the world to play because your hands work sequentially. And I had a penny whistle, and all a saxophone is really is a penny whistle with a few more buttons to press.
I'm just going to suggest that in my many years of studying music from a distance, I've always noticed that saxophone players tend to attract an awful lot of female fans. I'm just saying, I'm putting it out there, Jerry.
Well, about 6 or 7 years ago, I was playing with the Bus Pass Blues Band, who are reforming, actually. And I sort of witnessed this firsthand. I thought, well, I'll phone my mentor, Doug Davidson, who's always been on hand, and great, great tenor player as well. And I said, Doug, this sort of thing that, you know, saxophonists attract a certain type of female. I said, at what age does it stop? And he says, Jerry, I'm over 80 and it hasn't stopped yet. It's brilliant, he said. So there is a certain type. And yes, but this is we're on peak time. So I think we best limit the conversation. And I think I also have the right to remain silent and not admit myself as well.
The legal profession, you see, you can't hide from it.
Give
us your next record.
Well, this has gone back to the 80s, and there's a sophisticated lady called Sade.
Oh.
And the connection was that this was an artist that Anglin Buttermore introduced me to. I think it's from a Diamond Life album. And this is one of her biggest hits called Smooth Operator.
Thank you.
My Tunes it is, and all this week, my guest over our little contraption, the Clean Feed contraption, because we're not face-to-face, sadly, hopefully we will be again soon, is Jerry Carter, sax player, advocate, bon vivant. I think that's a good word, bon vivant. Jerry, thank you again for being with us. Let's look at the world of the legal profession, and without naming any names or anything, have there been cases that have completely stumped you or just amazed you?
Yes, there have been quite a lot, really, over the years. I've been doing this now since the Orwellian year of 1984, so I've been at it a long time, and I might get it right one day. But there have been some very funny cases. One stands out. I had a poor, unfortunate defendant who was not entirely teetotal and decided to turn up in the dock. He was being charged with burglary, and he'd obviously just sought some Dutch courage before that hearing and fell asleep in the dock and started snoring. Basically, the evidence against him wasn't very strong and didn't entirely impress the high bailiff. It was up at a court in Ramsey. And to cut a long story short, I put in a submission that just because the crime looked like the sort of thing that he'd do wasn't really good enough, you have to have some evidence. The judge went with me and threw the case out. Whereupon, from the dock, this gentleman woke up and said, "Mr. Carter, have I got bail?" So I said, "You're free to go." He says, "Oh, you've got me bail." I said, no, the case has been thrown out. It's been heard. The case has been thrown out, and there wasn't enough evidence. So they've chucked the case out against you. You've been acquitted. You're free to go. At which point he says, "Does that mean I've got away with it then?" Whereupon the high bailiff, who was still writing up his notes, just stretched a hand like a referee sending someone off with a red card to get him out. you couldn't write it, really. But there have been lots and lots of...
I love that. So he did walk free?
He did, yes.
Bless him. And it fast asleep. And that is, yeah. Well, there you go. Amazing.
He was awake till I started talking.
Oh, you see, these are the gems that we want, Jerry. This is the gems. Yeah. Let's talk a bit more about the music. I know you've been organising sort of jazz club nights, and I've yet to get to one. But tell me about those, and hopefully they'll start up again later in the year.
Yeah, this started in 2017 to mark the 40th anniversary of the death of John Coltrane, who was maybe the greatest tenor saxophonist of all time. And we decided to put a little set together at the Blues Club with Mike Divers taking the lead, and Steve Gray and Jim Horton and Alan Pressford was playing bass. So we did a little mini set. Then we were invited to play at the Blues Festival. And then we decided that there wasn't really a jazz club as such happening. So we started one up at the Queen's Hotel on the Promenade. Mike, unfortunately, was very busy. He's in the pit a lot for all the shows and things. And he started a big band. And a big band is something that I never think it comes over well on record, but really, really comes over very well live. And I'm hoping to go and see them soon when we're allowed to get out again. So we decided to keep the jazz club going, invite people along. We've had some guests, and we sort of save up some of our gig money, and we've been able to bring some artists over occasionally.
And hopefully this will all be back on in, well, let's look at the autumn, eh?
Oh, it'd be nice to get going again. And we've invited your good self along and your band, but you've had a lot of commitments, but we've just not been able to make the dates work yet. So we're hoping that's all going to change. And we're hoping to bring, if they're listening, the brothers Kane, Howard and Chris, who run a tremendous program on Friday and Saturday. And they keep getting, every time I mention it, they're getting closer and closer to coming out of retirement and coming and doing it for the sort of set. But I'm not going to stop hassling them till they decide to come down. So hopefully they'll be there as well.
Brilliant. Let's have today's choice. What's the record?
Today's choice, if we're on a jazzy theme, is again the connection with Danny Neal and Anglin Buttermore and Jerry Christian, who really been the guys that influenced me the most locally. Three phenomenal local musicians, and they put me on when I was a young lad to an artist called Tom Waits, It was a sort of jazz blues crossover, really. And I'd never heard anything like him before in my life, and I don't think many people had. This is, I think it's from the Blue Valentine album. This is a song called Romeo is Bleeding.
Romeo is bleeding, not so soon. So on 18th Street as usual, looking so hard against the hood of his car, putting out a cigarette in his hand, crawled up a jugal that it pumps at Romero's pain body, and seeing how far it can spit. But it was just another night, and now they're huddled in the brake lights of a 58 Bel Air, and listening to how Romeo killed the sheriff with his knife. And they all drove and they hear the sirens. Romeo just laughs. It's all a racket in the world. They ain't never gonna see that copper's ass. He ain't never gonna see another summertime for cutting down my brother and leaving him like a dog beating the car without his knife. Romeo says, hey man, give me a cigarette. And they hurry for that pack. Frankie lights for him, bats him on the back. Throws a bottle in a milk truck, and as it breaks, he grabs his nuts. And they all know they could be just like Romeo if they only had the guts. Romeo is bleeding, nobody can tell. He sings along with the radio with a bullet in his chest. And he combs back his fenders, they all agree it's clear that everything is cool and that Romeo is here. Romeo is bleeding, he winces now and then. Leans against the car door, feels the blood in his shoes. Someone's crying at a fire point in a phone booth by the store. Romeo starts his engines, wipes the blood off the door. And it brought his shooting signal with a radio full blast. Even the boys there hiking up their chinos. And they're all trying to stand like Romeo with their moon cut like a sickle. And they're talking now in Spanish, all about their hero.
It's the final My Tunes of the Week with my guest, who all this week
is, has been, and always will be, Jerry Carter. We're doing this not face-to-face, obviously, because you all know the situation by now, but it's great to have you on the line. I want to talk about, to start today, about some of the finest gigs you've ever seen. Can you take me through some of your finest memories musically?
Oh, again, it's one of the compensations of old age. You talk to some of the youngsters and you say, oh, Bad Company, Paul Rodgers, oh, I've seen them. And I've seen Roxy Music. The ones that I've liked have been the surprises. The first big band I ever saw was Status Quo, Palace Lido, back in 1976. I saw Deacon Blue at the Echo Theatre in Liverpool, and I was just overwhelmed by just how good they were. Darts, when I saw them in the Palace Lido, were, again, a band who were far better than I thought they would be. And it was a slightly different genre. I saw the Dubliners at the Villa Marina, and I just could not get over just how tight and professional they were and how entertaining they were. But I suppose the two that will always stick in my mind, I went to Nebworth in 1979, and it was one of the last ever gigs that Led Zeppelin played. Shortly, I think a year later, John Bonham sadly overdid the celebrations and killed himself. But Led Zeppelin were topping the bill at Nebworth Park, and it was the end of an era, really, and it was a fantastic gig. But for one thing, that would probably have been the best gig I'd ever seen. But the one thing I'll just sum up in two words, Freddie Mercury.
Oh, yeah.
I had the privilege of seeing Queen three times. I've seen them with Adam Lambert, which was wonderful. But seeing Queen in their pomp with Freddie Mercury twice in the Empire in Liverpool, and then again at Wembley Arena, when I had to drive home to Cardiff, actually, after that, which got in about 4 in the morning, or 6 in the morning, brushed my teeth and went off to lectures, because you could in those days. But just actually seeing Queen live and seeing that fantastic showman who had the audience eating out the palm of his hand, it was like you're having a one-to-one gig with this guy, even though there's 3,000 or 4,000 people there. I've never really seen any artist live like him, and sadly missed.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think they had the ability, the whole band. I mean, Freddie was probably, will be forever, the best front man of any band ever. Him and Mick Jagger, maybe, you know. But the songs seemed to work in stadiums, and they were all, I think I'm right, looking at the films and the books, they were written to communicate to stadium audiences and make everyone feel involved.
I think that's true. I think they sort of started that with the sort of "We Will Rock You" and "We Are the Champions," and it seems that everywhere you go, there's a Queen song to suit an occasion. If you think of the film Flash Gordon, it was a particularly bad film that was made into a cult film because of the soundtrack, and the same with the film Highlander, which wasn't a great film. Sean Connery's Spanish accent was
it was dire.
Michael Caine's Scottish accent in Kidnapped went, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
And such was the sort of presence of Connery, it didn't seem to matter. But it was a pretty awful film, and it's become a cult classic, and that's entirely due to the soundtrack.
Mm. Yeah, amazing.
The magic thing.
The whole Queen thing. Jerry, it's time for our final track. What are we having?
Well, it's got to be a Queen song, and it's from the album A Kind of Magic, which was the soundtrack to Highlander, although this particular song was from another film called Iron Eagle, and this was Queen's big comeback hit after Live Aid and everything, and I think one of my favourites. This is called One Vision.
Jerry, thank you for a fabulous week.
Pleasure's been mine. Thank you very much.
And here's hoping all the live music, all the pent-up live music, can be released later this year. We can get back some lovely local gigs.
Oh, I'll drink to that. I'll drink to anything.
Free beer for advocates.
Free beer for advocates.
Back on the table late September, I think. We'll get that going again.
one bone, one true religion, one race, one hope, one real decision.
Absolutely brilliant. Queen, what a song, what a song. One Vision, the choice of Jerry Carter, my guest on this week's My Tunes podcast. I'm Mark Tiley, and we'll be back with our friends from Shaw, Isle of Man, very soon with another podcast and another saxophonist. Tell you more about that soon.